This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. What humbly began as a family gum business in Brooklyn in 1938 has evolved into a classic American sports company. Throughout its remarkable history, Topps has proudly fostered an enduring connection between fans and their heroes. The first Topps cards came out in 1949 and featured magic photo cards that were inside packs of gum, with the likes of 19 baseball greats, including Babe Ruth and Cy Young. The global director of e-commerce at Topps, Jeff Heckman, is our guest on Sports Jam. So let's let Curtis Stigers put us in the mood for some baseball talk.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes are out at the old ball game.
And joining us from Brooklyn is the global director of e-commerce at Topps, Jeff Heckman. Thanks for joining us on Sports Jam, Jeff.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's an exciting time for Topps, and you might be thinking, well, wait a minute, the baseball season has been stopped because of the coronavirus outbreak. How can it be an exciting time? Well, for the Topps Trading Company, it is because of a very new project. It's always exciting at Topps, believe me. I'm a card collector myself, so I know all about the company. It's not the first time Topps has been here on Sports Jam, but the new Topps Project 2020 is really an exciting project. It gives people who maybe have never had an opportunity to really check out card collecting and interesting cards, maybe a whole new perspective, and maybe a whole new, for us listeners, a whole new audience, but a whole new participation. Tell us about Project 2020.
Yeah, so Project 2020, we kicked it off in March, you know, right after, you know, the coronavirus and the pandemic really kicked in. So, you know, the timing at we thought about was certainly far from ideal, but it's something we've been working on for, you know, several months prior to that. What we wanted to do is take advantage of the new decade and celebrate the 20 most iconic Topps cards of all time and work with really well-known artists in a number of different fields and allow them to really reimagine what these cards can look like in their own style. So we partnered with graffiti artists, jewelers, painters, people who are into cubic art, really a variety of different styles. And it's not too dissimilar than what you've seen in the fashion or sneaker world where somebody partners on a shoe design, you know, and they kind of come up with what their own interpretation or their own style is of that shoe. We've done that for these 20 cards. So we're working with 20 artists, 20 different cards, and every day on Topps.com. You can go to the site and you can see which two cards are available. They're only available for a short period of time, only 48 hours, and then we print the number of cards that are ordered. So, you know, it could be 1,500. We had one recently that was almost 35,000. It really just depends on the card player, the artist, how many cards are ordered. We print them and ship them to people in 7 to 10 business days.
Jeff, can you talk about some of the artists, maybe the ones that are from the New York, New Jersey area, maybe?
Sure, yes. I think we have probably around 5, so let me try and name them and get them right. So Blake Jameson is a painter. He's based out of Long Island City. Sophia Chang, she is originally from Queens. JK5 is a tattoo artist. He's in Brooklyn, but originally grew up in the Bronx. An artist named F-Dot, first name Eric. He's based in Queens right now. Those are 4. I think Andrew Thiel might be based in New York as well. Yeah, as a matter of fact, he lives in Harlem. And so those are 5 artists for sure that I know that are based in New York. We have some global artists and some ones in California. So I think that covers all the New York-based artists.
And not all of these artists were sports fans or did sports work before, right?
No, they're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, one of the things we were looking for is, you know, through the course of Topps' history, we've partnered with a number of artists, and back in the 50s when we first did our cards, a lot of the cards were paintings. You know, given where photography was at that day and age, it was, you know, original paintings and works of art that got turned into baseball cards. So throughout the course of our time, we've worked with, you know, a lot of, you know, pretty well-known artists and painters, but what they've done is really just kind of recreated the card exactly how it is. The goal of this program was to work with new artists that could kind of expose us to, you know, different audiences and really take their styles and have a lot of fun with baseball cards. So the only thing we really told them is, as far as the way the card looks, you know, really don't do anything to the logos. But other than that, you really have carte blanche to, you know, design it in whatever way you want.
So far, what has surprised you about some of the artwork? Now, you kind of knew going in when you selected these artists what you might expect, but what has surprised you so far on maybe a particular card?
I mean, just like an overall comment is just the detail and the amount of care and engagement that's gone into the cards from all the artists. A lot of them, as you mentioned, they may or may not have been baseball fans. Some of them are, you know, much more casual fans than others. Others of them are, you know, bigger baseball fans. They've really done their research on the players, their careers, their histories, and really incorporate a lot of nice, cool, almost like Easter eggs into the cards as far as, you know, stats from the player's career, as far as where they were born, you know, early things in their career. So it's hard to, like, pinpoint one card. I mean, all their styles are really cool and really unique. And that's been the most fun for me, is just kind of when they submit their initial artwork to us and we get ready to prepare and put it on the site, just to kind of, you know, see all the different things of what we offer every day. It's been extremely fun and cool for me.
We're speaking with Jeff Heckman at Topps. During this whole coronavirus pandemic, I've already known some people who have gone through their old card collection at Topps as a way to, you know, they have more time on their hands and actually kind of reinvigorating the whole reason why you have cards, you know, to enjoy and go through. What have you been hearing about people during this downtime as far as card collecting? And we know that Topps Digital is popular now, but people may be going back to the old days too.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that we've seen, you know, both through, you know, just, you know, reports as well as, you know, anecdotally and comments on social media, is, you know, card collecting has actually been, you know, really benefited from, you know, the pandemic, because it really is this perfect type of activity that you can do when you're in quarantine or in a lockdown situation. You can, you know, find your old cards, because people certainly have a lot of time and not a lot of activities they can take part in. So you can go through your old collection and look through that, and whether it brings up nice memories for yourself or you can share it with your family. You know, another thing that you can do is you can, you know, whether it's new cards or old cards, it's very easy to just do those, you know, in the course of your home with yourself, with your family. You can utilize social media, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, to post, you know, whether it's old cards or new cards. But it's you know, and even without live sports, you know, I think people are yearning and wanting to have some connection to sport, and this is, you know, one avenue and opportunity to do that.
Yeah, no, in particular, Seton Hall basketball announcer Dave Popkin and his brother Mike, who are both big sports fans and both have worked in the sports industry, that they recently spent a whole weekend going over their card collection, and they're both Yankee fans. Speaking of Yankees, Derek Jeter's release in April drew a big crowd. You have not only Derek Jeter, but you have Mariano Rivera, you have Dwight Gooden, you have Ricky Henderson, and Sandy Koufax, Don Mattingly, a lot of players from the New York area. Obviously, big draws when people want to see those iconic card figures and what the artists have done with them.
The Yankees and the Mets are certainly popular in this area, and throughout the course of their history, they've had a lot of great and iconic players that have played on their teams, and as a result, a lot of those players have been represented on some really cool Topps cards. So yeah, as you mentioned, you know, it's been really cool to be able to, you know, offer those cards, and certainly the fans, you know, around the area and just throughout the globe that are Yankees and Mets fans have been able to go to Topps.com to buy them.
And let's not forget New Jersey's own Mike Trout, his 2011 card. So that's the latest card. Tell us how that selection process went, why you went with more of the iconic older cards and maybe some of the newer stars.
I think for us, is we were trying to do something that hopefully is going to stand the test of time with Project 2020. You know, it's not something that, you know, we've done in the past, and it's not something we plan on repeating, you know, every year in the future. So for us, it was just really going back through our history and trying to find the most 20 iconic cards. And of course, too, looking back through that, you want to make sure that you have the rights and the abilities to use those. Some of the, you know, older cards, or a player like Babe Ruth, we never created a card because we didn't have, you know, the card, you know, capabilities during that time when he played. And then even some older players, too, you know, you may or may not have deals with their estates. So as we went and looked through it, and we looked at a lot of current players, you know, Mike Trout has certainly separated himself and has had a phenomenal start to his career.
Breaking pitch out toward left. Going back on it is gone, a big fly, walk-off style, and the Angels pick up the victory by the final of 6-5. Nothing Guyer can do in left.
Walk-off game winner, Mike Trout. This ball game is over thanks to Mike Trout. How about that?
Now that is impressive.
All signs are that it should probably continue. So we thought, you know, Mike would be, you know, a perfect player to feature in this. And then also too, we wanted to think about, okay, like throughout, you know, all the time the Topps has been around, almost 70 years, you look back at the different generations of people that have collected. If you show certain cards, like the Don Mattingly 84 card, so many people are familiar with what that card looked like, whether they collected it themselves, whether their dad did it, you know, whether their sons did it if they're a little bit older. So, like, just trying to find cards that are really iconic in the whole trading card and collecting industry was really what our criteria was when we selected the 20 cards.
A really good choice. And Mike Trout, I just watched an MLB Network special where Albert Pujols, his teammate with the Angels, was saying he will surpass him most likely if he stays healthy with his home run total. So at least Albert Pujols agrees with Topps that Mike Trout will be a legendary figure, and you've made a good choice there. Let's talk a little bit about your beginnings when it comes to what was the first card you remember ever coming into the hands of Jeff Heckman?
First that I remember collecting in mass was the 1985 top set, and probably one of the most iconic or well-known cards from that was the Mark McGwire USA baseball card. So that was one of my favorite cards as a kid, and you know, McGwire was certainly quite big in the 80s. So that card is one of the first ones in my memory. Kirby Puckett was also 85. I think it might have been his first card, his rookie card. So, you know, that 85 design. Roger Clemens was another really popular card from those are probably my earliest memories of trading cards. And from 85 to probably when I went to high school in 93 was kind of my, you know, really engaged, you know, collecting years. And then, you know, after that, as I got into high school, I kind of probably fell off a little bit as far as the cards I collected and going to hobby shops and taking part in, you know, shows and some of those things.
So some of the names that I haven't mentioned yet, and some are from the New York area as well, like Jackie Robinson and Willie Mays and Nolan Ryan, but there's also George Brett, there's Cal Ripken Jr., Tony Gwynn, Mark McGwire, as you mentioned, Ken Griffey Jr., Frank Thomas, Ichiro, and two that are special for me because my dad's favorite player was Ted Williams, and one of my favorites, as you probably already know, I'm from Pittsburgh, is the great Roberto Clemente. Tell me about Roberto's card and what, you know, what is has been fun and unique for the artist when they're dealing with that. Obviously, Roberto just transcends baseball, and in Puerto Rico and other countries like the Dominican Republic, he's pretty much a god.
He really is. I mean, not only was he an amazing, great player, but just everything he represented, like you said, such a great humanitarian, that he meant so much to baseball, to Puerto Rico, to the U.S. I mean, he just, like you said, is one of those players that really transcends what the game is all about. And he was so skilled on the field, and certainly it was before my time, but, you know, the highlights you see him throwing guys out from the warning track in right field, and, you know, had a lot of power and got 3,000 hits. What I've heard from the artists is they're so excited to work on this card, you know, just given everything that Roberto represents. And it's also a really cool card. You know, it's a horizontal card. It's got a dual image. It's got the old Pittsburgh Pirates logo. So there's a lot of really fun things that the artists can do with it.
The late Vera Clemente was a guest here on Sports Jam, Jeff, so I had a chance to speak with her many years ago, and she used to tell me the wonderful stories of how Roberto loved calypso music, but also how every day he would get up, he would have difficulty because of his bad back, and it's just hard to imagine when you saw him on the field what a great player he was, knowing he had those type of nagging injuries all the time. He also had neck issues throughout his unbelievable career. I got to see him in the 1971 World Series. That's the only World Series I ever got to go to, Jeff, but I was a young kid at the time, and I will never forget it. And so glad to see that Roberto's a part of this collection. Now, you go back to your schooling at the University of Virginia, but you went to high school in Illinois at Stevenson High School, where you were quite an athlete. You played soccer, basketball, and baseball. Tell us about your athletic career there in Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, I was probably better in my mind than I really was in the field all those years ago. But no, I mean, I grew up and playing every single sport that I possibly could, and baseball, basketball, and soccer were seasonally, you know, what were the sports that I played in Illinois. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and was able to play all three of them in high school, and you know, basketball and soccer at the varsity level, at the highest level. And soccer was probably over the course of time that became my best sport. You know, I played for a club soccer team in Chicago called Schwaben, a German club, and we had the chance to go over to Munich when I was in high school to play against some German teams. So soccer was the one where I was probably a little bit better than some of the other ones. Basketball, I never really grew, so unfortunately I wasn't able to quite be the basketball legend I wanted to be in the Chicago area. But yeah, soccer I was able to you know, play at a pretty high level in high school and got some local accolades and had a few opportunities to play in some colleges. I had the chance to play at Northwestern and Johns Hopkins. I ended up going to Virginia just because, you know, I thought it was just the best, you know, experience for me, and also I didn't necessarily think that, especially at that time, that I was going to go and play professional soccer. So I had the chance to play in the club soccer team at Virginia, which was great. The team when I was there was, you know, they were coming off runner-up for national championship and just a really great team. So I wasn't quite good enough to be, you know, one of the players on the top, you know, two or three teams, you know, in college soccer. But, you know, club was still really competitive, and a lot of really good players from around the country played in clubs. So that was kind of cool. And then actually, after I graduated from University of Virginia, I went out and worked for the Los Angeles Galaxy. So I got to, you know, continue with being involved in soccer. And even though I worked in the front office, I was able to, you know, be involved and, you know, see players and even practice with some of the coaches. So that was, you know, pretty cool for me.
Yeah, to play at the club soccer level at the University of Virginia just gives an idea of, you know, that you do have a lot of talent and a lot of skill when it comes to that. But you mentioned you had a chance to go to Northwestern. Eventually, you would get your MBA in marketing at Northwestern University, so at the Kellogg School of Management. So I guess Northwestern has always kind of been in your blood.
It absolutely has, and my father went to school there. So my parents grew up in the Chicago area, and my dad went to both undergrad and graduate school there. So yeah, I mean, it's always been something I considered. At the time, growing up in the Chicago area, I thought it was a little too close to home, and you know, I had aspirations to try and, you know, get out and experience new things and get to a new part of the country. But yeah, when I ended up moving back to Chicago after I worked for the LA Galaxy in Los Angeles for a couple of years, and it was a great school. I had, you know, a passion to try and get my marketing degree, so I was able to go there and get my MBA, which was great.
So does it work the opposite way now that, you know, card collectors look at these wonderful cards from Topps Project 2020 and say, hey, I'm interested in knowing more about this artist?
For sure. Yeah, I know what I think it's done, and from what I've heard from some of the artists, is it opens them up to an entire new audience, right? So whereas for us, as you mentioned, we get the opportunity to, you know, be exposed to fans and followers of these artists that may or may not really be that involved with baseball cards, especially not recently. But yeah, a lot of the artists, you know, are now opened up to the card collecting community. So some of them themselves have gotten much deeper into it and are doing, you know, more things within the collecting community, you know, even, you know, doing some stuff with autographs. And, you know, once the pandemic dies down, they have some appearances set up for them in hobby shops. So yeah, it's really been a great partnership for all parties as far as, you know, achieving, you know, the goal of just opening up the art and the card world to both audiences.
With digital cards and how Topps has been able to consistently reinvent itself. It's really a unique company, staying alive during so many changes. It has to be a sense of pride to work there.
It is. It's a really cool company to work at, as you mentioned. I mean, it's such a great brand. Everything that it's meant and represented to not only sports, but just really American culture, if you think about it. And one of the cool things about working at Topps is you go back into the archives and see all the things that we've done. And starting back in the 50s, is we did, you know, all the entertainment shows, all the big shows through the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. We partnered with great musicians like, the Beatles, Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson. So it's just really cool to look at archives and see all the things that we've put onto an actual trading card. And then just the nostalgia that there's, anytime you mention the word Topps, it just seems like at one point in every almost American male's life, including some females as well, they collected or bought a pack of cards at a store and had that great joy and fun of opening a pack and, you know, really trying to see what cards they get. And everyone has iconic memories of certain cards from their childhood, whether it was a star player or whether it was the player you thought it was going to be a star, or, you know, a trade you made with your childhood friends. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very cool, fun place to work from a marketing and brand perspective. It's just this really Americana type of brand. So there's lots of great things that, you know, every day you come into work that you can do.
Timing is everything, and of course, my next-door neighbor is mowing his lawn as we speak, so if you hear some of that lawnmower in the background, that's what's going on there. But Jeff Heckman is also a father. He's a dad of two, married, living in Park Slope, Brooklyn. Have you had the conversation with your seven-year-old yet about card collecting?
Oh, for sure, yeah. That's one of the nice things about Topps is back when we were going to the office, it's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, sample cards and packs that we get. So he really enjoys opening the packs. And yeah, I mean, definitely baseball, but also other things as well. We have Garbage Pail Kids, if you remember those. Those are unending amount of fun to a seven-year-old as far as, you know, the gags and jokes that are present in Garbage Pail Kids. He's done some soccer cards, some Stranger Things, you know, the popular TV show on Netflix. So yeah, no, he definitely has opened them. And it's probably more of a fight between him and his, me and him and his mom about what are you going to do with them, where are you going to put them in an apartment in Brooklyn. But nah, he definitely enjoys it. And I think, you know, as I've seen him get older and older, he's more into it. You know, every year he gets older. So it's kind of cool to see that cycle repeating itself now that I'm a father.
And as I mentioned, you have two kids and you have a young daughter. So how difficult has it been for you and your wife through this pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like a lot of people that are, staying at home and have two small kids, and my son's doing the homeschool thing, and it's primarily my wife that's taking on the burden of helping him out through that as I'm doing work. And then my daughter just is 2 years old and quite active. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely challenging to try and keep them engaged and busy. And, when you don't have many activities that you can do outside of the school hours and on the weekends, yeah, it's certainly difficult, but probably just like a lot of people in similar situations, and certainly friends and colleagues I've talked to, everyone kind of has the same feeling where it's challenging. There's certainly times when you want to pull your hair out, but everyone kind of realizes you're in this together, and however long it lasts, you know, you just kind of make do and try and make the best of it.
I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. You might not want to answer this question, but you only get to pick one of these cards. You can have all 20 versions from the artist, but you only get to pick one out of the set of 20 to take home. Whose card do you select and why?
You know, for me, it's actually easy. You mentioned I grew up in Chicago, so Frank Thomas, he was my favorite player growing up. My father was a big White Sox fan, so we're a big White Sox family, whereas a lot of my friends were Cubs fans, and certainly Chicago has a lot more Cubs fans nationally than they do White Sox fans, so it's a little bit of a sense of pride being that challenger team with a smaller fan base. But, I mean, without a doubt, very easy for me, it'd be Frank Thomas.
Heck, get out of here!
Center field, way back! You can put it on the board! Two-run homer for a big Frank Thomas. Sox lead it 6-5. Yes!
The Big Hurt spends a lot of time with it on television as an analyst. Do you enjoy watching him as a TV analyst and knowing that connection still is there for you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's cool to see Frank in any setting. You know, growing up, he was such a great hitter, and you know, myself and a lot of my friends tried to model, you know, after what he did. And I, at the plate, not only was he a power hitter, but he had a great eye, and could hit for average as well. So, yeah, it's cool. Like as he gets older, to see him involved in the game. And I had some friends that, you know, when we got older, he would, you know, eat at restaurants that they would eat at in Chicago and things like that. So, so yeah, it's, I mean, it's anytime that the White Sox are in the spotlight nationally, it's always great for a White Sox fan.
Going to the Topps website, you can see Topps Now, Derek Jeter career retrospective. Can you tell us about how that came about?
Yeah, so Derek just recently announced a long-term deal with Derek. So we renewed, you know, a partnership that we had in place with Derek. But given that this year was Hall of Fame year, it's a really, you know, big partnership on a grand scale that produces a lot of unique things for both Derek and for Topps, things that both parties, you know, really haven't done before. So, you know, as a result of celebrating his great Hall of Fame career and his induction this year, the career retrospective is we worked with Derek to pick the top 10 moments in his career. And each month on Topps.com in the Topps Now section, you can go and see what are those top moments, right? And it's really themed by the month. So this month is May, when he got his jersey retired at Yankee Stadium a few years ago on Mother's Day. You know, for all those that are familiar with Derek's career, you'll probably see some really cool things like the flip, Mr. November, diving into the stands, you know, some other things that are really iconic moments in his Yankee career. So we're going to chronicle that through this Topps Now, you know, career retrospective thing that we're doing on the website. And you know, in addition, the company, you know, has you know, a lot of really cool things they're doing with Derek as far as like our Transcend product is concerned, you know, and doing some really nice things where Derek can interface with collectors in a very intimate setting. So that's a little bit about, you know, what the deal is. There's really a lot of parts to it.
You're listening to Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest is Jeff Heckman from Topps, who's joining us from Brooklyn. Our signal isn't that great over the internet, but we're having lots of fun.
Say, did you hear the news about what's happening in Brooklyn? We really got the blues about what's happening in Brooklyn. It ain't official yet. We hope official it don't get. But beware, my friend, and let me warn you. They're thinking of taking the bums to California. Let's keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn. Our house is not a home without some love. Don't let them leave our premises. L.A. will be their nemesis, 'cause Brooklyn fits the Dodgers like a glove.
Living in Brooklyn, with Jackie Robinson and Sandy Koufax being a part of this collection, has anybody gone over the history with you? The little details that others might not know about, you know, you're from Brooklyn, Brooklyn Pride, the Brooklyn Dodgers. What stories have you heard about that team?
For sure. I mean, I actually don't live that far from where Gil Hodges grew up. And, like, you know, Flatbush is I believe Flatbush is where the old Polo Grounds were, which is not that far from my apartment. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of stories about the Brooklyn Dodgers. And then Topps as a company was founded and based in Brooklyn. So Cy Berger, who's kind of like the modern day father of trading cards, he's almost like our version of, you know, what Chuck Taylor meant to Converse. He grew up and lived in Brooklyn, so he became really close with a lot of the players that played for the team, you know, that played for the Dodgers, even some of the New York-based players like Willie Mays. So, you know, it really runs pretty deep, the Brooklyn collection in Topps history.
It can really be overwhelming when you go to the site. There's so many things to look at. There's wall art that you guys have got involved in. There's memorabilia. There's clothing. What's a good guide? How do you handle going to the website? Talk people through if they're interested in just checking out Topps in general and learning more about it. What can they do?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's one thing that Topps has really, really done is evolved with the times and evolved over the years. And there's what we like to think is kind of a trading card product for everybody. So, you know, if you were going to the site, I think first thing I would do. Go to the top navigation bar and look at, you know, shopping by brands, so you can see the different brands and then the properties we have, whether it's Major League Baseball, Star Wars. We've been doing Star Wars cards since the first movie in 1977. We work a lot of soccer properties. We do NHL sticker albums. So if you, you know, look in there and you're a big baseball fan, you can click on that and navigate around and see all the baseball products we offer. However, if you're thinking about more like, you know, the different brands we offer that you talked about, earlier, Project 2020, Derek Jeter. So you can go to the cards and collectibles. And then from there, you can kind of see all the different online products we do. And there's just a number of things that we offer on a daily basis of new content for, you know, collectors and sports fans to look at. So Project 2020, we've got Tops Now, which chronicles and celebrates the greatest moments in sports. Unfortunately, there's no live sports right now, so there's really not a lot of content that's on there. We do things, you know, every day for Garbage Pail Kids, kind of poking fun at what's going on in politics or the world or things like that. So, you know, I think there's a little bit for everybody. I think the nice thing about Tops.com is, yes, it can be a bit overwhelming, but also there's, you know, a little bit of treasure hunt that goes on where you can find a lot of really interesting and unique things on there.
Does Jeff Heckman have a tattoo?
Jeff Heckman does not have a tattoo. He's thinking about potentially getting one someday, maybe something meaningful, with family or something like that. But no, I don't have one right now.
Well, the reason I ask that is because you do have tattoo artists as part of this collection. Would you go to them if you decided? Because you're probably establishing a nice relationship there, right?
You know, it's funny. We've talked about that. One of the guys on my team who's a bit younger than I am, he does have tattoos, and he's a big fan of Ichiro, who's part of the sets. So he's talked to one of the tattoo artists about potentially, once everything starts to open back up, about going to get a tattoo. So yeah, I mean, if and when, if I ever do take the plunge, yeah, for sure. It'd be fun to have one of these guys that are in the program do it for me. I wouldn't say it's something I seriously am considering or, you know, thinking about on a daily basis or anything like that.
As you've been talking to some of these artists, what's been the most interesting thing that they've said about working on this project? You mentioned a little bit, but has anybody really touched your heart a little bit when they've talked about doing this work?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in various places, in almost all of them, whether it's publicly or just privately to me, you know, just the different, you know, comments and feedback I get from the artists about how much they've enjoyed it. Blake Jameson, who's one of the New York guys, like, he's just been so engaged with our collectors and our fans about the product and what they're doing, which is really awesome. Gregory Siff, he's an artist who lives in LA now. He was born in Brooklyn. He came to the office, you know, in early March before it closed, so we had an opportunity to spend a day with him and just, you know, all the feedback about how fun it's been to work on the project, how meaningful it is to them, and even too for the artists too during this time where, you know, the economy is quite challenged. You know, some of them it's you know, a good revenue source for them. So I'm happy and proud to be able to, you know, support the artist community during a time that's challenging for not only them, but really everybody.
When we're speaking about finances, for some people through the years, trading cards have been an investment. For some, it's worked out great. For others, I never seem to pick the right ones, to be honest, Jeff, through the years. But tell us, what are the cards that you would want to have right now? Maybe just a handful that you could really say, hey, this has been a great investment through the years.
Oh, that's a great question. Hard for me to say. I mean, I think anytime you're looking at rookie cards, those, you know, are always the most sought after cards in the Topps universe. And as you mentioned, you know, there's plenty of rookies that have panned out. There's plenty, just like the way things happen in sports, that have not. So it's hard for me to sit here and say, like, I'm you know, far from a someone who's going to be able to predict the future or anything like that. So I don't know who I would buy today. I mean, you talked about Mike Trout earlier. Like, if you can get your hands on some of Mike Trout's earlier cards, I think that would be, you know, really solid, you know, long-term investment. I think that, you know, any player that is still playing that is, you know, on a Hall of Fame track, you know, if you can track down any of those cards, you know, those would certainly be worthwhile investments, because I think what we've seen with trading cards, certainly once a player gets to a certain level, their card values, I don't think, are going to go down. They might not, you know, raise crazy like some people thought back in the 80s and 90s. At the same time, I think, you know, people are, you know, holding these and looking at them more as long-term investments and all, almost like their version of art. You know, people might not be able to go to, you know, an art gallery and afford a $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 piece of art, but to get a trading card that, you know, is somewhat limited as far as its circulation, and nowadays there's grading. That's what I would think, you know, people should do. But as far as picking out players, I don't know any more than the next guy.
Last question. So your wife says, I want to do something special for you, Jeff. So we're going to head back to Chicago, but we're going to go in a time machine and we're going to catch a White Sox game. What game would it be and why?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, I would probably go back to the old Comiskey Park before they rebuilt it, and what, I don't know what it's called now, Guaranteed Rate Field or whatever it is, but I'd probably go back to the 83 season, winning ugly, with those iconic uniforms where you got Carlton Fisk, Ozzie Guillen, Ron Kittle, Lamar Hoyt, Tony La Russa managing the club. I'd go to one of those games, maybe a playoff game, even though they didn't win it that year, and they lost to Baltimore, I believe, was the team. But yeah, I'd go back to, you know, just a meaningful game back in 83, and a nice summer day or night, and sit at old Comiskey Park.
It's been a lot of fun talking card collecting and Topps Project 2020 with Jeff Heckman. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us on Sports Jam.
Doug, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the shows by going to WBGO.org/Sports Jam or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on iTunes or on the NPR list of podcasts. Once again, we apologize for the internet audio quality during the show, doing our best as we practice social distancing. Until our next Sports Jam session, hopefully I'll see you soon at the game.